It's the Daily Talk Show episode 849. Tommy Jacket.
Happy Fat Fridays, Gronks. What's happening? What's going on? How are we?
Very good. What do you have for Fat Fridays?
Well, I go to this bakery quite a bit, just a coffee, and there is something in there that, like, I've built a story in my mind about what it will taste like. I don't know if it will taste like that, but today's the day we find out. It's a Swiss brioche.
That's huge.
it's a Swiss brioche. It's
Is it got like a chocolate log or something on it?
Yeah, it's got chocolate on the inside. It's glazed. Nah, it's chocolate. Let me open it. Hi, Josh.
Oh my God. How are you?
Looks like a little.
Did you cut alligator in half, or did they do that?
No.
It seems
it's
like
just a, it's just like folded over. It'd be almost like if you had a long roll that was soft and then you folded it in two.
It looks like a fake. It looks like a prop.
It looks better than I think it will taste. That's what
it
I'm
looks
saying.
Looks like Aladdin's bread, you know, like Aladdin stealing bread or something. Yeah. Like, it looks like it's from some sort of Disney film.
It's either a rotten roll that's been left out, or it's a really sweet treat.
Can you taste it for me now?
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't eat it like that. Oh, oh, it's very white inside. So it's a golden outs exterior, and then
it's brioche.
But I would have thought the brioche would have been when I think of brioche, I think like yellowy a little bit.
Well, I think you're thinking of like a burger bun that can be a bit sort of glazed on the top. Or it's the butter coming through. It's good, but look, I'm glad I haven't bought this previous. Like, you know, when you just like think something's going to be amazing, this isn't that amazing, but it's good. It's okay. But that's what we do on Fridays. We try the shit, and I probably won't try it again. Try something else.
I didn't actually end up getting through the Pop-Tart story the other day.
So you wanted to import a commercial quantity of Pop-Tarts.
Yeah.
But you'd never had Pop-Tarts.
I'd never had a Pop-Tart, no. And so I contacted USA Foods, got to that bit. They do like importing of different products. They didn't have it. And I ended up contacting Kellogg's, who are the, at the time they were the, I think they probably still are, they were the owners of Pop-Tarts. And what I found out was there was an issue with importing because Pop-Tarts have gelatin in them. Because gelatin is like a, it's like a
animal hoof.
Yes, exactly.
Hoof.
And so that's why they weren't able to actually import them. And so anyway, I ended up finding like a dodgy shop in the city that did sell them after all of it. Like, I spent weeks just like, you know, talking about it, trying to suss things out. Like, it was... I was meant to be running a video production business. Like, I was 19 years old, you know, out of school, meant to be running a video production business, living from
source the highest quality Pop-Tarts. Meanwhile, my 19-year-olds are trying to source the highest quality cocaine.
And so I finally found some in the city, had them, and I was like, don't know what the fuss is all about. Didn't really like them.
Just replace Pop-Tarts with ecstasy or cocaine, and you've got the same story, mate. It's not all it's cracked up to be. Little quick update on not an update. Pop-Tarts is a brand of toaster pastries that Kellogg Company introduced in 1964. If you're calling that a pastry, you have a distorted view of what pastries are. I think a French person would be disgusted that you called that a pastry.
Sure.
Pop-Tarts have a sugary filling sealed inside two layers of thin, rectangular pastry crust. Okay, so they're getting away with it because it's crust of pastry. But when you... That doesn't... It's...
Well, the ones that I
like... It seems like it's off... It's off-world. Yeah. It's an off-world food, right?
Well, if you look at especially breakfasts in America in general... It's pretty outrageous, the stuff. We went to IHOP we went at night, didn't we? But the breakfasts that they have there, they really shouldn't be classed as not even breakfast, but desserts. Like, it's too sweet for dessert sometimes.
Yeah. No. And you can put blueberry syrup on everything.
Yeah.
I mean, it is when you're just wanting to let loose, but if that's just your daily diet, it's it could, it's troublesome. It's real troublesome. Hey, there's only 3 days left. That's including today. 3 days left of your 20s.
Yeah.
Is there anything you want to do in the next 3 days that you haven't done in your 20s?
Maybe I should try cocaine for the first time. First time trying cocaine in ISO. Do it after 8 o'clock. Can't leave the house.
There's actually some comedian where it's like some petition to get him to take coke.
Oh, really?
It's the most bizarre thing, but it's a running joke. Anyway, I don't suggest it.
Okay.
You probably can't get it right now.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, what do you think? What am I missing out on in my 20s? What should I be doing?
Very limited to this time, but is there anything like, let's just spend the next 10 looking back on your 20s and just, you know, reel off a few things that you're proud of in your 20s.
Okay, yeah.
And then a few things that you didn't do, where you think you would be by now, but you're not.
Okay, sure.
So start positive and negative.
Okay, yeah, okay, yeah, perfect. That's how we like to do things. By the way, I've got a bagel coming, just for those
okay, good.
Playing at home and care about what I'm eating. I know you are. It does look good. You should have put butter on it, though. Anyway.
That's indulgent.
So, 20s, travel, did a lot of travel. So, very grateful for that. Worked at some great companies. That was great. Started a couple of businesses. That was great.
How many businesses? What have you had? So, 20, what business did you have? And then run me through your career for your 20s.
From the 20, well, so Josh Jansen Productions was registered when I was 15 or 14, 9 months. I got like the business registration or whatever. But my proper first business, I feel like this, it's like when you think about like what does it mean to have a proper business, right? Having staff and having like actually like paying myself super, shit like that. This is my first big media company, is my first proper business in that respect, and having people outside of myself that I need to worry about. But no, I was toing and froing. Early 20s, I had MediaFlex, my business, but I was a bit half-assed into it. So at the same time as doing that, I was picking up some level of employment here and there. Then at 21, 22, that was when I worked at Fifi and Jules as a digital content producer. And was there for a year before going on to Envato, which is a tech company. And then 6 months after being at Envato at the tech company, I got to do this world trip where I went to 12 countries in 90 days and I filmed all of this great stuff. So that was probably, if I look at my 20s, that was definitely a highlight.
Yeah.
And then going out on my own when like in my sort of later 20s, so when I was like 26 or whatever, and starting Full Stack Films, I think that was probably another pivotal moment because I was like more serious of like, this is going to be a proper thing. And then...
Well, the decision was made over an 80% hot chocolate.
That was true. Yeah. Yeah, well, so you and I were... We'd never hung out before. We had worked on a project in 2008 or 2009 and had sort of crossed paths or whatever, but never really had conversations in person. And it would have been January of 2016. You said you Facebooked me and said, hey, I'm fucking over this radio job that I've got. I'm going to go out on my own. I want to start doing video production. I know that this is stuff that you sort of do. Could we just have a chat? And just fucking, I'm sure you said, can I pick your brains?
Yeah.
And I was working at Envato at the time. We walked to Brioche by Philip. Which is like a sort of inner city shop that has like pastries and stuff. I got an 85% hot chocolate. Do you remember what you got? I can't remember.
Nah, I would have got a coffee and probably judged the fuck out of you.
So I got my 85% hot chocolate. And then we walked back and we went into, at Invato, they have a great courtyard. You know, they're in the middle of the city, but they've got this sick courtyard. And we sat and it was like, you know, January, so it's summer, it's warm. Probably could have gotten an iced hot chocolate, to be honest. Iced chocolate, but whatever. And you and I had a conversation whilst I remember someone from Invato had just bought a drone. And so they were
in the
courtyard flying the drone around.
That's great.
And so anyway, you said to me, you were like, oh yeah, I'm going to start my own thing, blah, blah, blah. And after that conversation, it was, I spoke to you and then I spoke to our mate Dan Wickman, who was doing his own thing. And I was like, man, I'm telling all these people, yeah, doing your own thing is the best thing you should be doing, blah, blah, blah. Thank you, Breezer. Breezer has just brought, is it a jalapeno? A jalapeno and cheese bagel. So that's what I'm having for Fat Fridays from Office, which is on Smith Street. A great cafe. And we did pay for this. So I don't, Bree's saying, say it's from Office. But we did pay for it. But Office is great. They are great.
Yeah. So you're telling all these people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm telling all these people to do the thing. And I'm like, fuck it. I should too. Because at the time I had bought in September of 2015. So sort of 6 months or, you know, whatever it was, 4 or 5 months before you and I spoke.
Mm.
I impulse bought an $18,000 camera on my credit card and decided I wanted to go to the Philippines and do a documentary film on fireworks because my philo mate said it was a good story. And so I had done that, been there, filmed it and all that sort of thing, and I had just released on New Year's Eve, had released the short documentary called Goodbye Philippines, which has over 200,000 views on YouTube now, which is all right.
Yeah.
I should be in a fucking Ferrari now. So, yeah, so...
But you forgot to turn monetization
on. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, no monetization. And so anyway, after speaking to you, I was like, man, this is what I love doing this stuff. And so I think it was less than 10 days later I would have quit Invato, which was a hard thing because I was there for 2.5 years and it was an epic place to work. Like, I got to do such cool shit. And so that was sort of my 20s. And then we found each other and started doing more things together.
Yeah.
You know, we traveled around Australia for DFO Insider, which was your client. We filmed all of that sort of stuff, which was fun. And then started doing the podcast.
Mm. And then the back end of your 20s have disappeared.
Yeah. Now I feel like I'm 45 with inflammation. Yeah. Just having to have a fucking cold shower just to feel like I'm living, you know?
Hey, it's the opposite of thawing out. You somehow fucking thaw out from a cold shower.
It's true. I literally, last night I was like, fuck, I didn't ride the bike today. Just gonna stand in the cold shower. That will do the same thing, you know. And you sort of do for a second, you know.
Yeah.
Have I explained my 20s? Do you think, you know? I love
from a work
story.
Capacity, yes. Uh-huh. But I think work is closely tied in with your passions and the people around you and you. A journey with Bree of 10 years, like that's your 20s, right?
Yeah,
Bree's been there that whole time, so her career's progressed and. Mm-hmm. Personally? Like, how do you...
Yeah, go on.
How do you go... what is personal for you outside of work? You're not allowed to talk to work.
Mm-hmm.
And the travel thing, like you just said,
that's... I don't know, so much of everything I've ever done has been related to work. It always has. Mm. I mean, even when Bree and I had our epic trip like a year and a half ago or 2 years ago or whatever, went away for 3 and a bit months, Europe and all of that. Like the daily talk show still felt like a big part of what we were doing when we were in Europe, we're racing around trying to find, you know, SIM cards for like 4G. So when we're on a Greek island, I can still do my podcast that, you know, with my mate that no one was really listening to.
It's so funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so funny. Mm. So you got your 20s, the things you do personally. What about the friendships that you've had mm-hmm. over that time? Who's been there mm-hmm. at the start of your 20s? Where have they gone? And now, mm-hmm. like, what have you learned about friendships in your 20s? Because I think 20s are your adult is mm-hmm. is really the entrance to adulthood. Mm-hmm. At 18, you've just left school and you're feeling mm-hmm. still like a kid, I reckon. Yeah. I did. Took me years.
Yeah, I think it's, what have I learned? I mean, that's where Bree comes in, right? Like, I think that Bree mm-hmm. and I have been that sort of, it's that consistency from a friendship perspective. But then also, I think I've been quite good at making friends in my 20s. If that makes sense. Like, I think that like a lot of that, you think about all the people that I'm closest to. It's like I didn't know until my 20s. Naysan, my mate, that was sort of like, 23, 24. I also feel like I don't have, like, my friendships aren't really my age group. I've never, like, it's always like, you think about like Mr. 97, you know, being 20, but then you've got like fucking Love Scooter Derek, or, yeah, I guess like Pete Shepherd's my age. But yeah, I think I've, what have I learned from a friendship perspective? I think I'm pretty open. I think I'm pretty open to making friends. I think so. It normally ends up landing related to what you're working on or what you're doing. And so your friendship group becomes, you know, you, GB, Jess, Sevs, like it's all, you know, and then you think about like the Gronks.
Just listing your staff. Yeah. By the time we've got 50 staff, you've got 50 mates.
Yeah, no, but you think about the Gemma. I didn't know Gemma. Two years ago, or Pete, there's so many examples of that.
I think there's a lot of people that probably struggle to make friends in their older age. I had a client, older age meaning just your adulthood, like mm-hmm. finding friends as adults can be a different ballgame to developing friendships as a kid. One of my clients who was my brother's best mate used to train with me when I was personal training, and he said, mate, I don't fucking want any more friends. I don't need any more. Like, I think he had an aversion mm-hmm. to making friends as an adult because he didn't want to have to invest that emotional labor.
And I definitely go through those things. Like, I think I've gone through that. I've gone through times where I'm actually done. I'm closing shop for a bit, not taking any friend requests, none of that sort of thing. I think... Yeah. Maybe I'm even doing that. Like, if you think about it, I think like when you and I started the podcast, there was a year and a half where it was just like you and I. Like, I wasn't really seeing other people.
Now we've got an open relationship. Yeah,
exactly. But no, but don't you think? Like, I definitely ebb and flow between like what I want, where it's like abundance, friends. And the other thing too is I feel like in those times when I do open myself up in regards to friendships, I am such an open book and I make friends. Like Tony Lodge is a great example from One Trick Tony. Her and I have become like great friends, FaceTime her most days, love chatting. And so I'm very, like, I'm open to, when I am open to friendships, I feel like I create really deep friendships, but then I go through times where I'm like, can't be fucked, not going to really talk to many people. But the good thing is that in like people know that I'm there if they need me, and vice versa, I know that they're there. And then it's like you with Conspiracy Jimmy. It's like you can have a few months or whatever of not chatting, but then when you start talking, it's like the same.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the history of all those years and development of friendship that allows that, which is great.
It is funny who drops off though. Like you do... That is a consideration, right? Where it's like you have moments like, oh, what happened to that person? Or, oh, man, remember when I was like spending... Or the other thing is workplace friends. like friends that you have at work. Like I used to always think like, it's funny how sometimes convenience is a big part of friendship. So if you're just like at an office, you just become friends with everyone at the office. But then when you leave, you might stay in contact with two or three or whatever it is. But then, yeah, it's very strange. Like you bump, like imagine you with, say, radio. Think about how many deep connections you would have at the radio station where it's like you had really intimate conversations or really big moments, but then you'd bump into them at the shopping centre. It's sort of like, it's like recreating the, or like sort of this speaking to a stranger that you're also very familiar with.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like Stace from the Thinker Girls.
Yeah.
It's we had a unique experience of life together that was doing a breakfast radio show where you are, it's a unique friendship where you're very close talking about, like even just the push to get two people to converse, the ultimate goal there is form connection, rapport, and entertain and inform. And so just that combination. Mate, definitely that thing's a fucking nightmare.
I think I've had it.
Imagine if I put butter on that.
I know.
Oh, Jesus.
Too much.
No, but you, so it is like a, I was going to say like a relationship, but it is like elements of a relationship where you are getting quite close, you know, through your words and like connecting and caring and listening and all of that stuff. So I think that's why work relationships can feel like that, because you spend a lot of time together. You probably spend more time than you do with your real besties, if you, you know, got those from when you're young, or and then you could travel with work, you could do all these things. And so it is cool, but I think it's as you get older, maybe you get to categorize or just understand where these types of relationships sit and how you work. Mm. What have you learned about yourself in terms of like, you know, that's me. Like if you got to identify with self and you're like, you understand your traits or your quirks and you're like, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
What is
it? I think it's like, yeah, what is it? It's, I mean, there's a level of, there's a disconnect between where I want to be, what I want to be, sort of where I want to be personally versus where I am, as in the, you know, procrastination. All of these things are just like so cemented into me. But I know that, but I think that that's why self-development is really important to me. Like I think that I'm always like, I could be doing more. I could fucking have this second brain should be fucking working by now. I should be like, and so I think that I'm someone who isn't necessarily that unique or that sort of talented, but I think that I've gotten pretty good at just like fucking up or like trying and then trying again. And so I think that it seems like the shit hot thing in 2020 to talk, or like probably last year, like failure, right? Like it's your success is like, you know, an equation based on failure or whatever they say. It's like, I think that I am someone who is completely fine with failing. And so I think that potentially the shift for me, 20s to 30s, I think like 20s, I've gotten to do a lot of, like I think especially when you're in ISO, you start to reflect on, wow, look at all the shit that I have gotten to do. And so I think that for me it's, and not Brian and I not wanting to have kids, I think that it gives another capacity. And I think for me that capacity is in helping other people. Like how do they, like how, especially because like it's funny, I was talking to a client the other day, and they said something, and they said, oh, well, you would have gone to a private school. And it was like, it was a funny thing. I was like, oh, no, I just went to, I sort of wanted to, I sort of go self-deprecating in those moments, because I'm like, oh, what, like, because I understand that you hear the stories. Like when I was a kid, remember my mum saying, yeah, this person, like, because I went to like a public school or whatever, you know, just in the burbs. I remember mum saying, so-and-so's husband will only hire people if they've been to a private school. It's just like, you know, fucking what a wanker type of thing, right? And but so the interesting thing is, I think I've definitely felt in my 20s, and Bree's felt the same way, is that we've been in these meetings or conversations with people, and you realize that the experience that other people have had is so different to the experience that you've had. And so I think for me, I have never felt necessarily that, not that I belong, but just like it feels like I've hacked my way to be where I am, if that makes sense. So the friendships that I have, or the people that I know and all that sort of thing, people just assume that I grew up in, you know, they just like your circles, right? Like that people assume that it's like, oh, you went to, did you go to school with TJ or whatever it is? And I think there's obviously like the residual effect that I'm gaining from that. But yeah, I think that the thing that I want to do is it's like help some of the people who it's like haven't necessarily had the network or that haven't had that specific experience, and being like, actually, let's just go on like enthusiasm. And then like, and like you can all, like if you find people that are enthusiastic, they can be fucking great. And so I think that I feel the responsibility where it's like helping people who it's just like, you know, my parents weren't in the media or anything. You know, like you hear the story, like you look at people who are really successful, and I fall into like the comparison thing. And then you're like, oh, it's a fucking different story. That dude that's like, was on set at the age of 5 because his dad was a director. You know, like everyone's got their version.
But I definitely think Richard Jansen should be a political commentator. It'd be great, right?
It would be great. Next bolt. But the does that make sense? Like, does that make sense?
No, but this is the shit that you come to terms with, and it can take 30 years before you really are like, this is the story I've been telling. This is what I've reconciled with it and how I deal with it and what I'm comfortable with and what I'm into, what brings the most fulfillment to me, like the helping other people. It's like these are all great things that take a bunch of time and navigation to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about life is that sometimes it just takes time.
Yeah.
And time's finite. And so you're ticking away, but it's like the people that make it, air quotes, later in life. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you could make it in any type of way, whether it be becoming the person you know you want to be and living in alignment, or fucking becoming a celebrity or building a business or having a family. Like all these things are versions of making it, but it's you're right. Comparison is the thief of feeling in the moment and being able to enjoy the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that it's like, and it's working out what, you know, like in business that you talk about, like what's your competitive advantage?
Mm.
And I think that a lot of people see the, you know, how they were brought up or where they lived or, you know, whatever it is, as a mark against their name to actually make it work. But I think that my perspective on those things have really shifted to be, you know, we don't, like I remember a specific moment being in Los Angeles with Nasan, and we were at a cafe and had this realization. So we'd just been to fucking YouTube, we'd been filming at YouTube, it was sick. And I was like in a cafe and I was listening to the conversations around me. This was like 2015, and every conversation was about content and like making it and like the project they're working on. And I think in the moment I was like, oh, this is sick, like fucking this, everyone's doing it, like this is like this is my world. But then I had this other moment, and it was like after when I got home, where I was like, there's so many people who are in Los Angeles or that are in these like key hubs that are all vying for the same thing. And there's just this sort of like homogeny that happens where everyone becomes the same ideas, same thinking, same backdrops for films, same actors. And so what I like is here, yeah, we like it is a much smaller market when it comes to entertainment, podcasting, whatever it is. But like that's our unique selling prop. That is like that's our competitive advantage. That's the reason why we can innovate and create, and like we would just like we wouldn't look any different to anyone else in LA, and would be telling LA stories or whatever it is, where it's like we can at least bring in some of those new things. And I think so part of it is just extending that, where it's like how do we try, and it's working out the things that you thought that were your the marks against your name, they're actually the things that make you unique.
Definitely. And what about one thing you want to achieve in your 30s? It could be something big, something small, something personal.
Yeah, I think it's like I love the idea of like having the a team that's developed, and that it sort of works. Like you want to, I think I want to create something that's not like that's something that's way bigger than me, that is feeding a bunch of other people. That's like they have their life and all that sort of thing, and they can be fulfilled. And so, like, yeah, I think from an achievement perspective, it's being able to watch other people around me succeed, if that makes sense.
That's good. It's cool. It's selfless, but also not, rewarding. I mean, there's for yourself.
Yeah, but also there's like so much. I can't remember what it was. There was a book where it's like there's like ego in all of these things, right? So like there's no doubt that like there's ego in me wanting to be some sort of fucking puppeteer or whatever that's fucking making all these things happen. And, you know, I'm like a bit of a...
Yeah, it becomes a lot of pain, though, for you. There's a lot of, like, a selfless act doesn't mean that it doesn't that there's no impact for you. If anything, there will be pain because you're trying to... It can just be, you're looking to help others. I mean, this is... Selfless fucking acts make you feel good. And so there is always a version of give back to receive.
But it's also like I think there's like diminishing returns in regards to what I can do for myself personally, if that makes sense.
Mm.
It's like when I was a kid, I wanted to live in the CBD. I had no fucking idea back then. But like, it's just like you want to be fucking in the city, like in like amongst it, like having an apartment. Yeah. Yeah, like growing up in the suburbs, having an apartment seemed like a rich thing to do, right? Like if you're in an apartment, like if you're just like fucking living that life in an apartment, to me that was like a bit sexy, a bit cool. And so in some ways, it's like I feel that like Bree and I have gotten to do all the things we've wanted to do. We're like living comfortably, all that sort of thing. And so then it's like, okay, let's do other, because I know that by helping other people with all of that sort of stuff, there's like an element of, it does take, like the selfish thing is it takes, there's a level of pressure, because I think that like from a strategic perspective, I'm pretty good at like strategy and then unlocking things for people and working out how all the stuff is. I think for me personally, I struggle to do all of that and then execute, like always being able to execute on the ideas. It's just a scale perspective. And so by having a broader group of people where everyone's executing, everyone's doing their thing, that's why I love like the network that we're building. It's like Tony's kicking goals, Tully's kicking goals, Jess is smashing it, Sevs is fucking doing so many things in the back end that people haven't even seen yet. GB's developing creatively all the time. And then even you with like all the systems and processes. Like I remember 2 years ago saying, let's use Asana or let's use this project management thing. I remember bringing it up on the screen. You're like, I just fucking Google Docs is working, Josh. I don't want another fucking thing, right? But now it's like you come to me. It's like, I found this new thing. I've created this fucking thing. This is like how we're going to do it. And so that's cool.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. All right, happy Fat Fridays.
Thank you. I'm going to eat my bagel now. I haven't had any of it. I'm fucking hungry.
This may be the last episode. I might be so congested after this.
A lot of
phlegm. I won't exist. Yeah.
What happened? Like, I wonder. Over phlegmed. What does that mean? If that can be a thing.
I don't know.
Anyway, all right. Hi at thedailytalkshow.com if you want to send us an email. If you enjoy the show, share it on Instagram. Share it with your mate. Tag us up so we can say thank you. Otherwise, we'll see you for Weekend Banter, guys. Have a good one.
See you guys.